cruising through the Arizona Hour with Sanderson Ford and Rosie on the house.
Makes it worse thinking of her, thanking you for forgiving me. It must be the whiskey.
And I said 4 ounces. Well, a typical shot is only 1.5 ounces. I said four, but that's a typical serving of wine. You ever seen the Red Solo cup, how it's got all those different ridges? Those are actually measurements. The bottom one is if someone's ordered a shot of whiskey, that's your measurement. The second ridge is your 4 ounces for wine, and then the top is your 8 ounces.
Went to the University of Toby Keith to learn that.
Well, well, well.
Things you learn when you serve crawfish.
I always thought that was how to fill it when you threw the ping pong ball into it. But it's a whole other thing.
And I can remember in my history, I think, of reading Washington's biography. I mean, he actually sued Congress at the end of his term to be reimbursed for all the wine he had served at Mount Vernon.
Yeah, because he entertained
a lot. Yeah. Out of his own pocket.
You know, he loved Mount Vernon, and when he was called away to serve in the Continental Army, and then he was reluctantly called again to be president and whatnot, all he talked about was, I want to be back home, my beloved Mount Vernon.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty special place. So we've talked about locating the site for the White House, as well as the layout of all of Washington, D.C. We've talked about the setting of the cornerstone. We've talked about the fact that George Washington never lived in it. The second president moved into it before it was finished and pretty much stayed in that state until the British kind of got their nose bent out of shape.
Well, the nose didn't get their nose bent out of shape. We did, about the British. What was happening at the time after the Revolutionary War, France and England go to war with each other, and they were going to war all the time. And what was happening is we as entrepreneurs were selling things to both sides and providing, you know, naval merchant type stuff. And the British started to kind of intervene in that, and they would capture our ships, and they would confiscate our goods as war measures. They would even take our sailors and put them on their ships, and almost as slaves on their ships, to work their ships. And so we wanted just free, neutral rights trade, and the British kept interdicting on that. And so we finally said, enough is enough. We passed several acts to say, look, we're just not going to trade with you. That wasn't good enough. And so we said, we're declaring war on you. We will be neutral, and you will respect our rights.
The War of 1812.
Which is not a one-year war. It's a three-year war.
But it starts War of 1812, 13, and 14.
Yeah, yeah. But it starts with 1812 with the Declaration of War, and it's really a three-front war. There's a war that goes on in the north in the Great Lakes area as the British stirred up Native American animosity against American settlement. Then you have the Chesapeake Front, which is the kind of the blockade of Washington, D.C., and eventually the attack Washington, D.C. And then the southern Florida to New Orleans, as the British were trying to make an inroad out of their Caribbean squadrons, were trying to make an inroad to interdict trade coming out of Florida and New Orleans and whatnot. And so three-front war.
And old Andrew Jackson kicked their butt down there.
Several times.
Battle of New Orleans.
That's right.
And Chalmette. One of the most interesting tours you can do on a trip to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Make sure you see the World War II Museum and make sure you take the paddle boat cruise out to Chalmette.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Great, two great things. Okay, so we're in a war and they decide they're going to blockade D.C.
Mm-hmm.
What made them decide to get off their boats and come burn our house down?
Well, they were again, fairly ticked off at us. And an earlier incident, a year earlier, up in Toronto, at the time it was called York, but there was a fort there called Fort Toronto. And one of our generals, General Zebulon Pike, put together an expedition of about 1,600 guys that sailed across the lake and invaded it, that little town, and captured the fort. And in that capturing of the fort, the British blew up the magazine there and killed the general. And the soldiers were upset by the loss of their general, so they put the town to the torch and burned down York, or what is Toronto. And so in retaliation, they said, fine, we're going to burn down Washington, D.C. So they burned the Capitol, and they went to the White House. And Madison was not there at the time, but Dolly Madison was holding the fort down, so to speak, at the White House with instructions that if they get too close, leave. And so at the last minute, she up and left, and British soldiers came into the White House hoping to capture an executive or something, but they just found warm food in the kitchen still. So they enjoyed a meal and poked around in the White House there for a while, then said, all right, guys, torch it, we're out of here, and burned it down.
And a part of my research on this is I watched Jackie Kennedy's tour of the White House mm-hmm. in 1962. That's still on YouTube. You can still see it.
Mm-hmm.
And she gives Dolly Madison credit for saving some of the oldest pieces that are still hung in the White House today. In her evacuation, she actually took furniture and paintings and, mm-hmm. you know, saved them from the fire.
One was an important painting of George Washington. And they didn't have room for the whole frame and everything, so she had them take the canvas out of the frame and roll it up and tuck it under their arms, and you know, as they were leaving.
So then you have the choice to make: do we rebuild it in its current site, or do we start anew?
Right.
And they decide they're going to rebuild it.
They said, and they said, hey, Architect Hoban, how'd you like this commission to come down here and help us rebuild it? And so he did. Now, it took 8 years to build the original one, and he did the rebuild in 3 years because he kind of took some shortcuts. But he was able to get it back together so that when President Monroe was able to kind of move back into it, our fifth president.
And then Thomas Jefferson,
who's our third
always
president.
Kind of seemed prissy to me.
Yeah.
am I misjudging the man?
He was his own man. Let's just go.
It seemed like every time something important needed to be done in Washington, D.C., he was back at Monticello with a headache.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, I certainly respect his writing, but right. It seemed like he was a little on the soft side.
He needed to retire to do that kind of great thinking and whatnot.
Okay.
You know, but Jefferson, he didn't like the pretense of the White House and whatnot. In fact, on his inauguration, he actually, walked down to the Capitol to do his inauguration. Had breakfast at the Blair House on his way. You know, just was a kind of a very informal guy. Didn't like the pretense of it.
Neither did he like the outhouse.
No, he didn't like that the president had to go outside. To kind of cold in Washington, D.C.
It can be kind of cold on that seat.
So he did bring in water closets upstairs. We had other presidents made changes. President Fillmore brought in a flush toilets and running water. And
we're talking the 1850s, yeah.
Uh-huh. And central heating comes in. Running hot water comes in the 1850s. Electric lights were added in 1901. So these were some of the changes that were made. It was actually Teddy Roosevelt that gives it the name, the White House, because by that time they're whitewashing all that sandstone to kind of keep it that bright kind of white color.
And the additions had been done in a Maryland sandstone, which is kind of a pinkish, so
right.
It was dual tone. And
so to make it pretty, they whitewashed it, and he called it the White House. And Roosevelt adds the East Wing and the West Wing that are the more executive office stuff to it. So that the president now has to walk to work down the little colonnade over to the east wing or the west wing. The east wing is where the first lady's offices are.
Now, do you know when air conditioning was introduced into the White House? This is a very interesting piece of history. We have a president shot. He's moved to the White House. They set it up as a hospital. And to cool the room, giant blocks of ice are brought in on the floor below, and fans are used to circulate the cool air to his room. The president was Garfield,
mm-hmm.
and the engineer that designed the air conditioning was Robert E. Lee.
Interesting.
It is interesting.
It is interesting.
The innovation of air conditioning in the White House.
Well, they had to also make modifications during FDR's tenure because he was in a wheelchair, and this was not an accessible building. So they had to put some ramps in and do some things to help that. But the war years, the depression in the war years, really took its toll on the White House.
Truman had some hilarious things to say about the White House. When he moved in, it's about ready to fall down.
Right. It had all those creaks. The floorboards were soft. He was afraid at one point in time a guest would fall through from the upper stairs down below. So he went into a renovation mode and had to because it was falling apart.
I mean, he wrote Bess and said, this place is haunted.
Yeah, that's how he was describing all the creaks and the shaking. It was pretty dark. In fact, the commission who came in to survey it said, you know, Mr. President, we should maybe just tear this thing down and start all over.
It was that bad.
That bad.
Which is interesting because when did Truman get in? Because it couldn't have been more than 30, 40 years from Taft. And I understand they had to bring in some serious structural reinforcements for Taft's
for bathtub. That's
right. Yes. A large man and all that water in that tub.
Truman takes office in 47, in 44, but it wins
Taft
presidency.
Taft would have been in the 10s, right?
Yeah, so about 30 years later. And so he starts a renovation project. They move out across the street, the family does, and they basically gut the interior of the White House, insert a steel beam structure skeleton inside the walls, and then rebuild the floors and everything back to the original floor, similarly to the floor plans, with the open staterooms on the first floor, the blue room, the green room, those, and then the residences parts up, the Lincoln bedroom and those things upstairs, recreated inside that framework.
We got the White House built in the 1790s for $250,000. We remodel it in 1950 for $5.7 million.
Right.
And I still think that's a pretty good deal. I mean, basically emptied the building, left the outside shell up, and recreated the entire house from the inside out.
Right.
And that's a tough job.
And imagine the preservation aspects because there were fine Scottish stonework and carvings over some of the doors, the fragility of all that masonry and of the exterior. Now you get that without cracking it and breaking it and all that stuff. And you got all those contractors moving through his stuff, trampling around, and it didn't destroy the delicacies that you see on the outside. It was quite a thing. And then they put a balcony in, which was very controversial.
Yeah, Truman didn't have the architectural inclinations of George Washington.
Or Jefferson or anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. But he is a little, I guess, like me, claustrophobic.
Right.
And there's just no way to get outside from where he is.
Right.
So he plants a balcony on the outside of the
building. Right. So the circular portico on the one side, he said, we should have access from the inside, the interior spaces of the living quarters outside. And so he put a balcony on it. And everybody was up in arms because it would upset the verticality of the house. The house had this kind of rising verticality to it. And all of a sudden you put this line across on that portico, it changes the look of it. But a lot of the presidents like it, and it certainly brings in that fresh air kind of thing to that moment. So.
And I don't know if this is serious or a joke, but if you look it up on Zillow, they say it's $420 million is this estimate. It says it's currently off the market. But that monthly payment, $1.7
million. They do that by comps. Other White Houses around, and they checked out, versus Buckingham Palace versus, the Trudeau Mansion up in Canada. What do they do for comps on that? Do they do the neighborhood?
That's tough.
Similar estates?
And that verifies at least a $1,000 per foot construction cost.
Right.
Not counting the security and everything else.
Right.
And I guess there's some pretty extensive security.
There is. The security measures you've got to protect the president.
You got to.
And his family.
Look at all the windows in that building.
All Pella, by the way.
And all bulletproof.
Yeah, in fact, I think I read somewhere that they'll stop a bullet shot from, 2,100 feet away and remain intact. High-powered bullets. It's so pretty incredible. Now, there's the usual stuff like Secret Service, and you got to have an ID.
And we'll talk more security after this because we can do a lot of things at Rosie on the House, but we can't stop that clock.